Curly and Kansai,
a podcast about the experiences of two black women living in the Kansai area of Japan. All right, we're back for another episode, episode three. Woo-hoo. And people are still listening and watching.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So much. So how have you been since the last time we did?
Well, I got my hair did.
Yes.
Well, so. I did it.
Well, for those who can see us, we got twists with, what is this type of hair?
Kanekalong.
Yeah, because I don't know how to say
Kankalong.
That.
I think it's Kanekalong. They don't sell it in Japan, so we have to order it.
Yes. So, online. I mean, Elise has the skill to do it herself. I got it done by somebody else.
YouTube tutorials, man.
I just don't have the YouTube. Patience. Like, I can redo, but anyway, that's another story. So, today,
today's topic. Okay. So, I thought of today's topic.
Yeah, she sure did.
And it's kind of, it's how I've changed, but it's got a little bit of a twist. So, it's more how I viewed my blackness before I came to Japan and how that view of my blackness has changed since I've been in Japan.
Yes.
So, it's going to be a bit of like a background. Because obviously not all black people are raised in the same areas, same states. You know, we don't all come from the exact same place. So our early experiences are different. And those experiences shape how we interact or deal with things, you know, for the rest of our lives. And I thought it'd be interesting to compare. And then maybe, you know, if you guys have any anecdotes from your past that you think,
I don't know, you want to share? Yeah, I mean, sharing is caring. It could be fun. So with our experiences, we'll start with basically
where we came from.
Yes.
Go ahead. Where we came from. So I was born in Southern Virginia. I'm a Southern girl, but not as Southern as other Southern girls, I've been told.
Oh, okay.
And I come from a very strong black family. So lots of strong women, strong men. Everyone's very educated. My grandmother, she got her doctorate. Her sister got her doctorate. They worked for the government, like high-level positions in the government. My mom got her bachelor's. Like, everyone is college-level educated. And we started out at a black Catholic school.
Okay.
Which it was like a, I think it started as a center for, like, underprivileged children. Because even though my mother, she went to college, got her degree, after divorcing from my dad, is a mom with three kids.
Right.
You ain't got that's that much a lot. Money. So this school opened up and they were taking in kids, you know, low income kids or, you know, kid parent like families that needed that extra support. And we went there and it, since it was an all black Catholic school, it was very like, it was almost militant black.
Okay.
Like we had two pledges.
Yeah.
We had a pledge of allegiance to the American flag and then to the black, like black African American flag, which is the red, black and green. And we had a pledge of allegiance that we had to say. It was like, I pledge allegiance to the flag of my brotherhood and sister. Like, it was like its own pledge.
Wow.
To, like, blackness and, like, you know. So we celebrated Kwanzaa along with Christmas. And, you know, Black History Month was every day.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I did not
expect that. But I thought this was normal for me. I was like, oh, this is school. School is where you do your black pledge of allegiance and you do your pledge of allegiance. Right. And, you know, it was really strict, but also very warm and welcoming kind of upbringing.
That's good.
So how about you?
Well, I grew up in a basically white neighborhood in the, not really upstate, but it's the suburbs of New York. And although my family is has a Caribbean background, and my dad's straight from Grenada, like, we learned about that culture, and also Black American history as well. Like, we joined, like, we didn't join Jack and Jill, but do you know about Jack and Jill? It's like a society for Black people. It's like, like a bougie kind of, like,
what?
Like, society thing, but we had
it's
another,
like a, for, like a sorority fraternity
type? Kind of, but, like, families and young kids can be in it, our area didn't really have a Jack and Jill, but we had an H&G, and it was very similar to it, but it was, like, the lower version. I don't know if it was lower version. It was just, like, not as cool as, like, going to Jack and Jill, and then they had events, like, pro-Black events, of course, and stuff like that. And that's where I learned my history.
Okay.
And again, like I said, my dad was very pro-Black and also wanted us to know about our Caribbean culture. So we went to Grenada a lot. Mm-hmm. But like going to school, it was just predominantly white people.
Okay, so your home experience and your school experience.
Very different.
It's quite a gap.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so I'm the opposite because it was all integrated.
And then I had, like, you were raised by your mom mainly, right?
Yeah.
And then I had my parents, plus we were like upper middle class, so we also had a live-in like housekeeper. But
oh my God.
Right? And then we also only had Caribbean live-in housekeepers.
Wow.
So it was like someone straight from like Jamaica or Grenada. So,
and she used to like take care of y'all or something.
Yeah, from Monday to Friday. And then she would go home on a weekend, take care of her children, and then come back and take care of ours.
Wow.
And like now that I think about it, it's kind of weird.
You're
like,
so
why
bougie.
Would like
I had no level. Your level of bougie is extremely high.
I didn't
you had a governess. Wow.
And now that I think about it, like, wow, we were really privileged.
Yes. Okay. So that's very interesting.
Very different.
So you have a lot of privilege, but there's a big gap between, let's say, your like main lifestyle, and then there's like your side African American at Black lifestyle.
Yeah,
I wonder if that they have to have that gap in order to maintain that like level of privilege. Like if you just come off straight off of like super pro Black, maybe it's difficult to integrate in that community because they'd be like, "There's that Black family." I mean,
well,
I'm sure they said that. Anyway.
I would say my mom's side of family is the bougiest of bougie.
Oh,
and my dad's side of the family is more down to earth. And my dad did not even want to live in that town when they got married and had started having kids with my brother. It was just like my dad was trying to please my mom because she was trying to one up her.
She's just trying
her
to
brother.
Up.
Her brother was in a nice area, so she's like, "I gotta one up." And it was like we gotta be in this area, far from everybody, and in this white town that only had very few Black people. So like my class always had like my whole high school had 5.5 Black kids. So yeah,
Oh my God, I can't even imagine going to that high school. My high school was like all Black kids.
I had culture shock going to the other high school when I moved. Like my parents went through a divorce, and I moved to an area that had more Black people. It wasn't New York City, but it was still in the suburbs, but it still had like a more diverse setting, and that was culture shock for me.
Moving
to Japan was not culture shock.
So moving within your own country, just to a different.
A town like 30 minutes down was culture shock for me.
Yeah, I never had any culture shock because my whole life has been like mostly Black communities. Like I started in Southern Virginia. Then my mom got joined the military and we moved to PG County, which is where we've been ever since. PG County is like one of the wealthiest Black counties in the country. Yeah. And it's, I think, over 60% African-American, and then the rest is, like, I think next is white, Hispanic, Asian, and then I think it's labeled as other.
Right.
And so my whole education experience has always been with a bunch of Black kids, like, one Asian kid, and, like, a couple white kids.
Okay.
So that's, like, all ever. I'm like, okay, I guess the world is just full of Black people and a couple other people.
So we had basically polar opposite.
Barely polar opposite.
Yeah.
So when coming from an area where you're the only Black person and then going to an area where there are a bunch of other Black people, did you feel any insecurities about your version of Blackness compared to other students?
Yeah, I did. Especially when they are like making fun of how I spoke and they always thought I was really rich. Mm-hmm. Especially like when I moved to the new high school. My parents were going through a divorce, and I decided to live with my dad, who was living with his sister. So we didn't really have our own place. So it's like for them to say, like, "Oh, you're rich in that," I'm like, "We're not. I just, you know, grew up over there, which had more white people, but that doesn't mean I'm rich." Mm-hmm. And then, like, technically, I'm not rich. My parents are, like, rich, if they are, but they're not. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it was kind of annoying that way. But I kind of, like, got it together. I joined the track team, so I had a group. I wasn't, like, really isolated that long when I started, yeah.
Okay, so you were able to reconcile and just kind of join in.
And I was, like, trying to fit in, but I still felt awkward because I wasn't, like, Black like them. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't, like, the white kids. Like, I also didn't want to hang out with the white kids anymore. Mm-hmm. I was, like, so tired of them because I spent my kindergarten to 2 years of high school with them, and I never felt...
Were you looking for something different?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Especially when I moved, I was like, oh, yes, black people! But I was still, like, a culture shock for me. I was like, oh my God, how do I act in this? And then my dad was upset with me sometimes because he didn't want me hanging out with certain black people. And
oh, like, no. All extra levels of, like, self-deprecation.
It was
going
so
on.
Annoying because, like, I had friends who lived in the projects, and mm-hmm. I felt like the projects was nothing. It was no big deal. Mm-hmm. And it was just, like, a couple buildings, and like the people that I knew were really cool, so mm-hmm. I didn't have that judgment, even mm-hmm. though I was like raised
in a white environment.
Yeah,
that's interesting because I, being always surrounded by black people, eventually kind of got sick of it. Like when I was younger, I think as young black children, we don't have... Of course, we're not fully formed in, like, certain opinions.
Right.
So, in general, like, everything's A-okay. We all play together, and we're all kids, and it's whatever. But, like, around middle school, you're like, when people start coming into their own, especially, like, sexuality. Right. Middle school is definitely where it starts. And I had all of these, like, hypersexual friends, because everyone's like, oh, I got a boyfriend. Let me make out at lunch. And, da, da, da. And I'm just like... That's cool, but I'm going to go study or I'm going to go like play video games. Like playing video games was not cool in like 98, 99. It was not the cool thing that you did. So eventually, I mean, it kind of started when, because in the PG County, they have a tag program mm-hmm. where they separate kids that overperform, I guess, on the basic curriculum. Okay. And they put them in a class that has more difficult set of lessons. Mm-hmm. And so the kids in those classes tend to have similar interests, which we'll be studying because obviously, and we all seem to like video games and like watching TV and stuff. Right. While the kids in the regular class were more concerned with like pop culture and music and fashion and stuff like that. And so when we get to like middle school and high school, then the divide really grows.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, why do you like wear glasses? Oh my You have braces. Oh my God, you're never going to get a boyfriend. Oh, wow.
I don't want a boyfriend. But
this is in middle school? Yeah, it started in middle school.
Hyper-sexualized like that?
Oh man, we had Parasuco jeans, which are super tight, and I wanted a pair because all the girls had them because they make your butt look huge, and I was like, I want to have a huge butt, and I'm going to get a boyfriend. And my mom was like, I'm not buying you no $70 motherfucking jeans. And I was like... Okay. So I had to get like the knockoff pairs, and I really wanted to like fit in and be like cute and like attractive.
Right.
But obviously, I'm like 12 years old, and I didn't have anything.
No.
So after, like, I kind of got a shock from that.
Yeah.
Like, because obviously, no one's gonna look at this like gangly little 12-year-old and be like, "Oh yeah, she's hot." No. I'm like, "What the F are you doing?" So after, like, I wasn't rejected by anyone really, but I could just feel like this wasn't the group that I wanted to be in.
Right.
And so then I kind of started to hate that version of blackness, like that super cool, and they listen to rap music, and they have like nice butts, and they're all cool, and they like...
I guess we were similar in that, because I was also gangly, and was not sexy at all.
Yeah, so I felt like I couldn't fit in there. So then we had the opposite, like, black people group, mm-hmm. which was the black people that didn't fit in with the normal black kids, the cool black kids, the nerdy black kids, and the nerdy black kids group was... You often like, oh, the Hispanic kids, the Asian kids, and the white kids, because we all had like the same classes.
Right.
And so we all had similar interests, games and, you know, studying, and, oh, I'm going to major in this. And we're like talking about college. It felt like two different worlds.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that reinforced in my young mind, oh, like regular black people do this stuff. I don't want to be like a regular black person. I'm going to be like this group, to me was like racially ambiguous because we had so many different people.
Right.
In that group, we weren't labeled by our race.
Okay.
We were just the weird kids. The weird honored class. So, but I was kind of in a way trying to throw away my blackness because I was like, I'm just going to go into this blob group over here because I feel more natural. And I thought, I guess to me, in order to relax and feel like myself, I thought I had to get rid of my blackness.
Mm-mm.
Which now I obviously know I don't, but back then I felt like I spent a few years of just trying to distance myself with certain versions of blackness and certain ideas that stuck to the black community. So I stopped listening to any kind of hip hop, R&B. I was like, I'm just not going to listen to it anymore. I'm going to listen to rock music. And then I started listening to Japanese music. And I didn't listen to any more popular.
Again, we had polar opposites. Yeah. Because I was like, more black. It's like, I don't want to be anything associated with white. Like, yeah. I stopped listening.
And right. But and I guess that's what happens when right. you grow up in extremes, right? Right. I grew up in the extreme black community and end up trying to get away from it.
Yeah.
And you grow up away from it and right. end up trying to dive into it.
Right.
And so by the time, I guess, it came to coming to Japan.
Mm.
Of course, by the time I got to college, I think I didn't have such an aggressive
okay.
idea about blackness. Of right. course, it was it because then by then I'd met more black people that right. associated with both groups,
okay.
with the more popular hip-hop idea, but they also played video games. So then to me, I'm like, okay, you can exist in both of those. That's it doesn't true. Have to be one or the other. But then at the same time, I was just ready to like move on,
mm-hmm.
I guess, away from the D.C. area. So
then you came to Japan. But that was like,
after I forgot where I was going.
Yeah, it's okay. I get it. Like for me in college too, I had similar experience as high school mm-hmm. because again, I was on the track team. I went to two colleges
mm-hmm.
and I realized that, yeah, I'm a little bit different compared to some others because mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a little quirky or like a little, maybe too much, have too much energy.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told me on one of the, what was my first school? It's like, Ayana, you need a boyfriend because you have too much energy. I'm like, what?
The I'm hell too is hyper. That
what is that? And she's like, you need someone to calm you down. I'm like,
wow.
Okay.
Wow.
So again, I was a little bit different, especially in the clique of the track team. Like, I didn't get along with a lot of them. Like, I would have like little friends here and there, but it wouldn't last that long. It's like, mm-hmm. this is a track team. We should get along. But then, like, even in my second college that I transferred to, it was something similar. Again, it was like Southern black. So mm-hmm. I went to school in North Carolina, in Charlotte. So it was mm-hmm. like, okay, this is again a little different. A mm-hmm. little bit of a culture shock, but not that much different.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just like, these are Southern black people.
Right.
I'm from New York.
Okay.
And they're like, oh, you talk like this. Like, yeah, son, what up, son? I'm like, I don't talk like that. I'm from the suburbs and don't talk like that. So yeah. So after college is like mm-hmm. when I got more into my own identity because mm-hmm. like I didn't have a clique anymore. I didn't have a team.
Mm-hmm.
I started learning Japanese because I wanted to do something new. I saw my brother was studying Portuguese mm-hmm. and doing capoeira. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, that's cool. He has this thing. I don't have my own thing, I felt. Okay. So that's when I started doing that. And I went to like a meetup group where they were studying Japanese. And then that's when my group of friends changed from like nobody because when I moved back to New York, I moved mm-hmm. to the city, so I didn't have any friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a mixture of black, Japanese, and white, and stuff like that. It was more diverse.
So how did you feel like about your black identity then? Was it like something that was on display, or was it something that you were trying to, I don't want to say cover, but it's like something that you try to like.
I wasn't so being so pro black, but I wasn't like trying to cover it up either. I was mm-hmm. just like, ooh, new culture, Japanese. I want to dive into this, but I don't mm-hmm. want to be it. I just dive into it. And then I also was kind of like, I now notice that I was really into like Japanese boys and wanting a Japanese boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another topic.
So like, I'm trying to think like, before I came, like when I think of myself now and how I'm, of course we have several movements that have come up in the last 10 years that change how I think black people relate to themselves and popular culture and everything. Cause nobody was as woke as this, as we are now,
no.
you know, well, like 20 like years ago. I don't
like that phrase so much anymore.
Woke. I know. It's a bit overused, but I'm trying to think enlightened.
Yeah.
Enlightened.
Okay.
You know, people weren't as enlightened as now, back then as we are now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't feel any particular need to represent myself. Right, when I first came to Japan, I was just like, I'm just going to be here and I like Japanese fashion. So I'm going to buy all these Japanese clothes. I'm going to be cute. And I'm going to try to dress like Japanese people because they look so cute and I want to look cute just like them.
Yay!
And of course, this wasn't me so much trying to get rid of my African-American identity or anything. Right, but in my head, I was just like, I just want to do this and it's going to be really fun and I'm going to dress up and it's going to be great. But now,
you know what I realized, though? Like, for me,
mm-hmm.
when I decided to move to Japan, I just remembered, like, my brother was into capoeira, and my dad was so proud of him because it's something related to the black culture in a way, because like there's a lot of black people in Brazil, whatever. And I chose Japan. It was like the opposite. My dad never said anything, but I can tell his enthusiasm wasn't as high as it is for my brother. You know, it's he's like proud that I found something to like get like more money because I got a job in Japan. But he wasn't like really that happy. He thought I was only going to be here for a year anyway. So like I was a little bit of a I was a little aware that I'm separating from my blackness in that sense with my family, but I still felt like I know who I am. I know my culture.
I know I am.
But I still like Japanese culture. So I didn't want it to be like I want to go into Japan and be Japanese. I never thought that. And I also didn't have like the weeaboo kind of way of thinking of Japan. Like I knew I had a more realistic view of Japan and I watched a lot of dramas.
You weren't looking for giant robots on the streets.
No, not at all. And it's like I didn't want to be like the too wide-eyed, bushy-tailed type person going into Japan. Like, Japan is a magical land of land anime and bunnies and rainbows. And no.
But it is.
I mean, in not, some areas no, that are not regular.
So when you came to Japan.
Yeah.
So, okay, we have to figure out how is this going to go from your former blackness, image of blackness. Okay, so how would you describe your image of the African-American community when you, before you came to Japan? Like the image you had. Because like my image is like, it's where I grew up. It's the people I used to hang out with. They can be a little boring and like basic sometimes, so I don't try to hang out with them so often. But they're cool, and it's where I came from, so I'm proud of it. But I'm more proud now because I realize how precious it is to have a place that you came from.
Yeah.
And an identity attached to
that
place.
I would say I've always had that, though, with Caribbean culture. So it's not like I ever thought.
And then you've never been super close to that because you've lived in New York.
Yeah, so I also had issues with being, sometimes I had issues because, like, when I go to, when I went to Grenada, the kids, because I went when I was young, the kids would be like, oh, you're a Yankee, you must want, like, McDonald's and this and that. So they would tease me for being American.
Oh, so it's very similar to Japan in that
way. Yeah, yeah. And then, like, when I was in New York or in school, like, they would tease me for being, like, talking white. So it's like, I don't have pride in any of the places that I'm at.
You guys are all assholes.
F you! All of you.
All of you guys. Right. It's hard to have pride in a place that you were ridiculed in.
Yeah.
So. Which is, I think, why I was happy to leave DC, because for me, it wasn't a place that I was necessarily proud of because I spent a half of my life being ridiculed for liking what I liked. So I'm not going to miss you motherfuckers. No.
Like, my dad was really proud. Like, you are a Grenadian and this. So it's like, okay, my dad thinks I'm this. But when I go to Grenada, they don't think I'm that. So it's just like, okay, as much as I love my culture, I can't be like, Grenada, Grenada, Grenada. And then my mom never, you know, exposed me to Barbados. So I'm not always like, Barbados, Barbados, Barbados either. I would put it on my flag, like put up the flags on my Twitter. I have them up because I'm proud of the culture. But I'm not going to be going there all the time. Plus, I don't have money to go all the time. And I mean, I can always just put myself in there. But I just feel like I'm not going to be the type of person who's, like, super prideful of a country.
But now, okay, of course, then you had some issues because it was difficult fitting in.
Yeah.
So maybe you were more hesitant to really just be like, yeah, Grenada. But now, after living in Japan for several years.
I always talk about how I'm, like, Caribbean and... I try to mention that first, but people are like, oh, where are you from? And I don't like lying. Or I don't like, like, if I joke, I just immediately after that say, yeah, I'm from New York, not the city.
Everyone always assumes.
Always. So, like, I would say where I was raised, but I always am more prideful of, like, my Caribbean culture. But I'm also American, so.
Okay, so, like, what I'm thinking is when I came to Japan, being black was kind of secondary. I put being myself above being black as an identity.
Okay.
Because I felt like I didn't want to feed into, I didn't want to attach myself to some of the pain that I felt from being ridiculed. And I felt like I didn't identify with that black image because they were so cool and they were into all these things that I wasn't into. So that's not me. Okay. So obviously that I don't identify with that blackness. Right, right, right. But now, since I've come to Japan and I've been away from, like, I guess being surrounded by it, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Way more. Yeah. Like, I listen to way more hip hop than I ever did as a kid, because now I'm not ashamed, because I'm like, oh, everyone's going to think I listen to it just because I'm black. But I'm more than, because I always felt like I'm more than just black.
Yeah.
I don't listen to hip hop because I'm black. I listen to hip hop because it's good.
Exactly.
They got good music.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was afraid of what, I was really afraid of what people would assume about me, because especially when you're a black nerd in those days, everyone has assumptions already when they see you. Okay, you're a black kid, so you obviously, you listen to Wu-Tang, woo. And it's like, what? No, I don't. I didn't have the Wu-Tang video game.
Okay.
But, like, you know, I was afraid because I didn't want people to make assumptions just off what they saw.
I
so I always put it on the, like, I'm black, but actually I am a proficient, I'm an artist, and, like, I put all these other things in front of being black, but now I don't mind saying, yes, I'm black, and I'm also an artist, and, like, I don't mind if it comes first, because I guess I understand that people will have their assumptions anyway, and being in Japan, because that's what they see first, regardless, and it's not, it's nothing but just, they don't have anything to relate to, I guess, other than what you look like.
Right.
So, kind of being here helped me deal with that.
I feel problem. I put that push it, but I say it more, I put it out there more because the people that I've been around with are very ignorant about it.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So it's like you said you were afraid. I was more like, no, you need to be educated, because although that's what you think, that's not what it is.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, I'm black. I'm American. Because they would be like, oh, Americans, this and that. It's like, well, actually, no, I didn't grow up like that. And I didn't eat that food. I didn't listen to that music. Like, I mean, some of the music I did, of course, like NSYNC and stuff. But it was just like some of the things that they were saying about Americans. I'm like, not all Americans are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just had to educate them like that.
Yeah. So do you think you've come closer to your blackness than you were when you left the States? Do you feel more, does it feel more familiar to you, even though you're, what, 3,000 miles away?
Yeah, and then every day I'm always looking at articles or stuff online to connect or learn the history of. Like, there's two online teachers that I found through Twitter that are really pro-black and trying to teach, like, their community about some, like, hidden figures and stuff like that. And just, like, to me, it's like, I didn't know that.
Right.
It's just, I love learning about that stuff. So I feel like I'm more into my blackness now that I'm in Japan.
I think I've definitely come closer to it. Like, before, I didn't really make any effort to look any deeper because I was like, this is the place where I was literally, like, raised in. I already know.
Yeah.
But obviously I don't know everything there is to know. I don't know about, you know, I knew surface level Martin Luther King and Malcolm X as a kid.
Right.
But now I know that there's always more, that you always have to go an extra level, go a little bit deeper. And I think being in Japan helped me learn that I need to do that for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And that it, like, someone's not going to show me these things.
Right.
I have to kind of look for it myself. And that's been great, just exploring more about myself, because I want to teach people here about myself.
Exactly.
And if I don't know anything about myself, I certainly can't go around teaching Japanese people anything about me and where I came from.
I also felt more of a connection with, like, other types of blackness, and then also, like, people from Africa. Because, like, in New York, it's like a bubble, sorry, what is it? Melting pot. There are a lot of people you meet, but there are a lot of people you also don't meet in New York. And for me, I did not meet a lot of Australians, New Zealanders, and then I didn't meet that many Africans. And then plus, the Africans you might see in New York, people don't want to talk to. I don't know, because I didn't really encounter them. But, like, meeting the Africans here, the ones, the cool ones, not the ones in Roppongi trying to get you in the club. No, I'm talking about people that I've met personally and talked to and befriended. I was like, wow, I really don't know this culture at all. And I wanted to know more. And I got more interested in, like, wanting to visit African countries because, like, I don't know.
So being in Japan has really raised interest in yourself.
Exactly.
And
in, like, the history of everything. It's like, I'm from the Grenada.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not me personally, but my family's from Grenada. Like, I had that extra culture that other black Americans that are not outside.
Right, you have an identity.
Yeah, so it's like, but I ended up not wanting to be too prideful about that too, because then Black Americans like, oh, so you think you're all that because you're like Caribbean, like blah, blah, blah. It's like,
ooh, oh, there's so many extra. There's
so many, and then they also do that to other Africans. So it's like I know how that felt. So I felt a connection with like Africans in that sense, but I didn't really encounter many personally. So it's like being in Japan, I met so many different people, and then finding out that like, oh, you know, you guys have similar issues going on in Africa, of course. It just might be a little bit different. So I also like tell like, especially Black American men, when they say something like problematic about Africans, I'm like, y'all need to chill.
Yeah, that's true. I did meet, meeting Africans, meeting Black British people, which I've never done in my life. So I'm like, oh, snap, I forgot. Black people are probably in other countries.
Exactly. Not just America.
And it's not like I don't know. It's just that you're not, obviously it's not, they're not on American TV.
No.
So we don't have like a popular image like, our Black British friends have a Black American people because we have lots of movies and things. So it was like, oh, yeah.
But now Netflix is changing that with Chewing Gum.
Oh my God, I love that show. So, it was interesting to meet Black people that come from other English-speaking countries because, of course, we're similar, but in some ways we're so different.
Right.
And that's just another way to learn about ourselves as a Black, global Black community and then me personally as a Black American and where I come from. So much self-discovery.
So much.
About Blackness in a place that has almost no blackness.
I mean, like, we have our group, but, like, comparable. It's not comparable.
I guess
at all.
Being isolated causes a lot of introspection.
Yeah.
You just look into yourself and, like, okay, I'm here, I'm different, and I just want to, you know, talk about it.
And then, like, when things happen in the States that are, like, really big, like the killings and stuff like that, the police killings, it's just, like, I'm not there, and I really want to know a lot more information what's going on. So Twitter is my main source of all of that. Yeah. Black Twitter, I mean, when it's not Black trying Twitter. To attack somebody, and when it's, like, going on, like, you know.
Yeah, Twitter has been a great source of information because it's not going to be on Japanese news.
No.
Almost never.
Oh, my God, and the stuff that does go on Japanese news.
Oh, it's never in a good light. It makes Black people look bad so much that I'm always ready to like defend Black people to my Japanese friends. I'm like, nah, don't watch NHK because NHK got a biased view. So it's Black people. Don't believe we're don't.
I
watch
always
it. Like,
I give so much information to my bilingual best friend. She is so happy when I tell her. She's like, I never knew.
Japanese people literally don't know because that information is
and
in
she's
English.
Smart too, but she just doesn't get that information. It's because she's friends with me, she knows.
It's in English, and Japanese people aren't really going out of their way to search for information in English, which I totally understand. I'm not searching for information in German, you know. I'm basically left with my language, English language.
Right.
So, yeah, I do the same thing. I'm always, like, trying to, I'll take English news and I'll make a little blurb about it in Japanese. Like, oh, this story is about this. And some, very rarely, but sometimes the Huffington Post, the Japanese Huffington Post page will translate some of their more popular articles.
Didn't know that.
And so if I can find those articles, I'll try to share it. I feel like some people read it, but then I feel like some Japanese people they don't want to be bothered. They're not.
It's like, this is not my issue.
Yeah. It's weird. That's a whole nother.
That's a whole nother thing.
But I think I've come much closer to my Blackness, and I feel like I've grown into it more than I would have if I stayed in the States.
So all in all, for the both of us, although we lived polar opposite completely lives.
Different.
Even though we're both Black, we are now more into, more aware of our Blackness.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
It's been interesting.
Yeah. Thanks, Japan, for that.
It was cool.
Cool. I'll give you that. So, okay, let's end it on that. And now we can rant because this is, you know, Elise's favorite.
I got a mini rant because I was on my way here and I was walking down the stairs, and Japan has great stairs because they're wide, so you can have four columns of people walking on the staircase.
But
two in one direction, two in the other direction, okay? But for some reason, a lot of people see these wide staircases and they decide, I'm going to strut down the center. And not in a straight line. No, that would make too much sense.
I'm going to zigzag.
People can walk by me if I walk straight. But if I do zigzags, like I'm dodging bullets, boop, boop. Then people don't know where to go, so they have to just stay behind me. And this happens. I have to take many staircases on my way to work, on my way here. Like, Japan is full of staircases, basically.
Yeah.
Like, DC doesn't have as many staircases. Yeah. We have an underground, like, we have subway and stuff, but almost everything is escalators or elevators, so not that many staircases. Japan has a lot of staircases everywhere, and you will always find somebody that's like, and sometimes they have arrows. Hey, walk up this side and walk down this side, but you'll still have a mother... walking up the middle or walking up the downside or walking down the
she's so hype right now.
It like blows my mind because I'm like, this is not a language problem. These are arrows are not a language barrier, but everyone can understand arrows. Okay. You understand arrows?
Yeah,
you can be okay.
I don't use them though.
Anyway, that's into the mini ramp. That on to the main ramp.
Very short.
Just wanted to get that off my chest because I was feeling it.
You feel better?
I do.
Okay. So, yeah, our main rant this time is going to be about the Kohai Senpai system. Now, if you don't know what that means, Kohai means?
Kohai means, like, what's the kanji? Later something.
Senpai means, like, basically senior and...
One is a senior and then one is, like, the younger person.
Yeah, so can you explain the system better? Because I don't think I can.
It's like a hierarchical system of... separating people, and
get your words out.
Let me think about this for a second, because okay. I've been thinking about it, but then I didn't think about it for a while, so I gotta rethink about it. So it's usually separated by age.
Okay,
so the older person is called the senpai and the younger person is called the kohai. Essentially, the kohai is the subordinate of the senpai. They have to listen to the senpai. Whatever the senpai says, they usually agree with, or they do. Traditionally, you know, this had uses in feudal society because feudal society is basically a giant senpai-kohai system. There's the daimyo, who's the biggest senpai, and then everything kind of tumbles down from there. And it's often based on age because the head of the household, the oldest person, is going to be the leader.
Yeah.
Traditionally in Japanese society. So this setup is featured in all aspects of Japanese society. In the workplace, you have your kohai senpai. So the senpai is usually the department head or your manager or whatever.
Yeah.
And because people used to be in Japanese companies for their entire lives, obviously the older you are, the longer you've been in the company. So therefore, you should obviously have more experience and you are the senpai of the people that come in.
So it's not meritocracy at all.
It's not, what's the other word? Egalitarian? Is that what I wrote?
Yeah.
It's not equal. It's all based on the pyramid system where the oldest person has the
most. Doesn't matter if you're more skillful. You have to be there.
You are the subordinate.
The longest.
Traditionally, this meant you did whatever they said.
Yeah.
Obviously, times are changing.
And younger people are not trying to do that.
And, well, sometimes you change jobs and maybe based on your experience, you're in a higher position than someone older than you.
Yeah.
Because people, especially even in Japan, they're what is it called? They called it the lifelong work system. Like, you stay in a company for your whole life. That system has fallen apart because companies have been going bankrupt and people haven't been getting their pensions. So now people change companies more often and there's an age difference that's happening. But that kohai senpai system is still in place. So sometimes even if the person is older... If the person is older than you, but they're not as skilled as you are, you still have to default to them because they're technically your senpai.
Yeah, yeah.
And then sometimes they don't even know, they're just older. They get into a high position in the company because they're already older.
They don't know how to do anything.
Yeah, they don't even know how the company runs. They have years of experience, so obviously they need a high position even though they have no idea what this business is and how it runs. And so then you're expected to automatically respect them as if they know what they're talking about. And then you go to a morning meeting and you just look at them like,
I'm guessing you've had more personal experiences with this in your job.
My job is not that bad because it's 60% non-Japanese.
So then is it mostly your husband's?
My husband's company is very bad about it. Like, they had to buy their company president's book as part of joining their company. Because I guess he's a doctor, so, you know, he must have something in his book that you need to learn. Wait, and he had to write a paper about it.
So what is your husband's job?
He's a care worker. He takes care of the elderly. He's been doing it for years, but he's technically the youngest in his company.
Right.
Because the oldest person, I think, is in their 70s.
Okay, wow.
So he doesn't really, even though he has experience, he's licensed, he's been working at this company for several years, he should be getting paid more, and he's taking over more positions. He's still technically everyone's kohai, and he still technically has to, like...
So, like, many times I would tell you, or your husband, like, oh, you should just change jobs, but you told me that, like, he doesn't want to go through that whole system again.
He doesn't want to have to start at the beginning of a company as the kohai, because... He's like, well, what if, you know, they treat me badly? And,
or worse than the company.
Yeah, now. If they're worse than the place that I work now, I don't think I could take it.
It is so, like, unfair.
Yeah, I'm like, that basically traps him in one kind of shitty position because he's afraid of getting something shittier. And I feel like that's what this kohai senpai system is. It's like, it does work. And, you know, people always talk about, well, it's great for, like, teaching the younger generation how to do things. But you don't need the kohai senpai system to teach people.
You don't.
You can just respect people and teach people and not get mad at them if they don't use an honorific when they're talking to you, which Japanese has a bajillion of. Like, there's so many different ways to speak to people in Japan. It's like the humble and then the honorific, and then there's the polite. And if they're your senpai, then you have to use honorifics, and then they can use their kind of not very polite way of talking. And
This is mainly, like, between Japanese and Japanese, so it's really not that much to deal with foreigners. But I've heard foreigners deal with crap like that who are in the setting of more of a business-type job. So if you're a teacher, you might have a little bit of it, but not so much. Not really so much. But you might get the bullying still, because the kohai senpai system definitely promotes bullying.
Yes.
Because that's in their culture. It's ingrained.
Yes, it promotes victim blaming.
Yes.
It leaves a lot of people, victim shaming. It leaves, I think the problem is that the small percentage of people that do take advantage of the senpai kohai system, the power just goes to their head.
Yes.
And they end up abusing it. And then you get things like, you know, black geisha, which are like companies that are like not treating their employees
well. When I first heard that, harassment. I was like, why is it called black? Why do they have it called black? But it's like,
I know.
It has nothing to do with black people. It's just called
black. My mom did the same thing when I posted about it on Facebook, because she used Google Translate. And she was like, what they say about the black company? I was like, mommy, no.
It's not a black people company. It's like, they're in the black.
Like, yeah, it just leads to, like, power harassment, which is a problem in Japan. It's a documented problem. It's a problem that's been on the news. People have committed suicide from these kinds of power harassments, where it's like the senpai is telling them you have to do this project, or they give them a shitty time schedule. It's like, you have to do this giant project in a day because I'm your senpai.
I have an experience, or, well, I have a story that somebody told me that this girl, she committed suicide because the people were like, you have to do this, and they pay half the amount of, like, foreigners get. They're teachers, right?
Right.
And the girl's, like, overworked, and they're just like, oh, you're not doing it right, you gotta do this. So, like, she ended up, like, killing herself because of the bullying or the senpai kohai system. It's just really ridiculous.
Right. I think it's just... And I talked to one of my Japanese friends about it, because I'm like, well, do you feel like some people take advantage of that system? And she's like, sometimes it's... There are bad cases that end up where people get bullied and stuff like that. But it teaches, especially for younger Japanese people, she was like, it teaches us how to relate with people that aren't our friends. Yeah, okay, yeah. So in Japanese schools, right, you have the teacher, but it's not like an American, like, elementary school where we're with the teacher all day. Okay. Teachers can't leave the classroom in America, right, because we are their responsibility, so they just can't roll out. In Japan, teachers roll out the classroom all the time. Like, they're not always there. So kids are often left on their own to build their own kind of structure.
Okay.
Which, you know, where kohai and senpai comes in. Okay, you're the oldest, so you get to be in charge.
Okay.
Young kids in America, we do too. Oh, okay, you're the oldest.
Yeah.
You're in charge.
Yeah.
But the thing that changes is, like, they use the system all throughout, even through high school. In my high school, you have your teacher, but you're working with your teacher too, right? Your teacher is there to teach you and guide you, but they're also, like, closer to you than, like, maybe with your parents. You can talk to your teachers.
Right.
But they're not as close as your friends.
Yeah.
So you get that relationship, like, dissonance. You understand, okay, in this situation, this is how I act with this teacher who I'm close with, but they're not my friends, so I can't use slang. But they're also someone that I can rely on for advice.
Okay.
They don't have that with Japanese school systems, I think. Mm-hmm. It's kind of left to the students to create that. And so I think the senpai kohai system is there to, like, okay, so we're not friends, but I'm here to, like, support you as your senpai.
Okay.
So they take that position up, and I, when she explained it to me, I was like, okay, I can see why you still keep it then. because for young people, it just helps set up boundaries. Mm-hmm. Okay, this person's a friend. This person is not a friend, but they're like an acquaintance. Okay. And so now I treat them differently than I would my friends. It just
I get it, but I just, you know.
But I feel, yeah, I feel like after maybe that age group, you probably don't need it. After you've learned how to, after your people skills have, like, grown to the point where you know how to interact, you could probably do away with it and just kind of leave it at...
You know what's funny to me, though? Like, with the whole system, like, I would see, because I saw a lot of dramas, I would see, like, bullying and all this type of stuff, like, shown in the media, and it's, like, normal. And then it's just, I was just, like, shocked. Like, oh, that's just TV. That's whatever. Mm. But now that I work in this company and I see it in real life, I'm like, oh, crap. They are not lying. That crap happens.
Yeah. Some of the dramas seem, like, melodramatic. Like, ah, it's never that bad.
That crap happens. Yeah. Like, if I didn't understand any Japanese, I would be thinking, like, oh, why is he raising his voice? I would just think he's angry. But, like, when I actually hear what he's saying, like, he was saying to my coworker, the newest girl, he was like,
she's the kohai.
Mayday da. Like, it's a command.
like, what? In what office does someone yell it's a command? Like, I would just be looking at them like, I'm not a soldier, though. This isn't the army. So if you could just ask me, like,
and he would always say, Kimi, mayday da. Oh, and then, like, at one time, he was, like, saying for her to go home, like, like, you need to leave or whatever. Like, basically want her to quit.
Why? What was she doing?
She just made a mistake. And then, like, the way she was talking, she was like, okay, I understand. But, like, she wasn't saying what he wanted to hear. So he was like, no, you say it like this. And oh, she would just, like say, like, okay, I'm going to do this. Like, no, you have to say it like this. And she was like, say this. It was just really ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like, it gets taken advantage of. And I think it's better to, like... Like, my friend says, like, it's not as strict as it used to be in Japan. Right. Like, it used to be way more strict. Like, you would never talk back to your senpai. But now, my friend was like, yeah, I used to talk with my senpai normally. Like, she was senpai, but I could still be like, hey, I think that's this is a good. Better idea. So it was more of a two-way street.
Burn that system.
I mean, I think they're going to probably keep the name senpai kohai just for the sake system. Of... for the sake of, like, appearances.
Did I tell you about the time my coworker, the old man, was trying to shame me? By, like, trying to teach me a lesson by shaming me? It's like, I'm not Japanese. You're not about to shame me. You can tell me what to do and what not to do, but you're not about to shame me.
How? What?
That was, like, the first month or first 2 months that I was there. I'm like, no, we're not doing that. I've been in Japan far too long for me to be affected by that. So
what? How does he try to shame you? Just like yelling at and like, trying
yelling,
to embarrass you?
Not yelling, but make me feel bad for what I did. I was a minute, not even a minute late, but he was trying to tell me like, oh, you have to be here on time. If you're not, then this and that. Like, we're going to. So I was like, you're going to dock my pay or something for a minute? It's like, oh, if I do it 2 times in the month, then I'm considered absent, even if I'm a minute late. And I did it twice in a row. And the second time, I was trying to rush. Mm-hmm. The first time, I didn't know. I was just like, okay. But again, I was there at 9. Mm-hmm. And that's when they do the whole, like,
chode,
mm-hmm. which is the morning chanting about BS for, like, a second.
It's like a pep rally.
And they started. Mine's very short, but they started early, like a minute early. So I was standing like, oh, you guys already finished? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it was only 9. Mm-hmm. Like, they start at 9, not finish at 9.
Right.
So I was like, something's wrong with the clock. And then he told me. I'm like, okay, whatever. But then the second day I was late, like, again, I was rushing. It's like, I'm here. He's like, oh, no, it's the second time. Like, you're going to be considered absent.
That's
like,
ridiculous.
Are you kidding me?
I'm like, if you tell me, I'm going home. If I'm really absent, I'm going to just go home. Right. There's no point in me staying.
So I said, out of all the 8 hours that I'm there for 1 minute twice, I'm late, you're saying I'm absent?
That's ridiculous.
So he may be like... feel bad. I'm like, no, we're not doing this.
That's ridiculous.
So
I would have been fired from that job because I'm never on time. I'm not a morning person, and I'm glad that my colleagues understand that. So I mean, I make up for it. I work late. I work the time that I'm late. Yeah. So if I'm like 10 minutes late, then I stay 10 minutes or more if I have stuff to do. Just some stuff is so rigid, and I'm just like, you guys, you gotta relax if you want to survive for, like, another 20 years. Like, I can understand how young Japanese people feel so hopeless sometimes. Yeah. The system is oppressive and stressful.
It is. And, I mean, it makes sense why there's suicides and stuff like that. And then, like, I read something about how, like, the teen suicides are still very high because of the bullying. It's still very high.
And a lot of stuff is unreported. Like, in Japan, oh, I don't trust nothing on Japanese TV because so much stuff goes unreported. Osaka police got in trouble for like faking police records for like 5 years. They like changed the number of arrest or something like that. Like, I don't believe nothing on Japanese.
That's ridiculous. That is so
I take
bad.
Everything with like the biggest
it has handful to be, of salt. It has to be really big for it to be news. Like, the last thing that I heard was from Oats, and that was like 3 years ago.
About place, what?
The suicide in the high school. Like, everybody mm-hmm. knew that the person was suicidal, and then they, like, offed themselves, and it was big news. But I think that was, like, 3 years ago.
There's been a couple. I watched the news, like, once or twice
then
a week.
Then again,
and
I have
like
no TV here, so I don't even know what's going on anymore, so.
I don't have a TV either.
You're lying.
Shh. I don't want NHK coming to my house, man. They get on my nerves.
All right,
I don't even watch NHK.
NHK is another rant you can have.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
But I guess we'll leave it at that. Basically, we both think the Kohai and Senpai system
is outdated.
Very
outdated.
And it
should be, like, severely reworked. Or just get rid of it and teach people to treat each other with respect.
I just want the companies to start, like, thinking about merits. Like people doing their job well and, like, getting raises from that.
I feel like newer Japanese companies are going that route. Okay. Like, the younger startup type companies that have a more open workplace system, they're definitely going that route. It's just, like, older, larger companies. You know, Toshiba, Panasonic, all those huge.
My company, I still feel, is old still.
Anything that was created in the 70s is probably going to be garbage.
Yeah. All right, so we'll end it right there. We kind of went a little over, but that is okay.
That wasn't a rant. That was like a critique.
That was a bit of a critique. Not so much of a rant. That's okay.
I had my real rant before that stamps.
You had your rant. I did not. We're not going to go into that, but we didn't get many questions from the listeners. It would be great now. I think this episode might spark any, so please, if you have...
I'm sure we were very confusing at points.
Yeah. If there's something that you did not understand, please, like, write a question under the comments in YouTube and in SoundCloud so far. But yeah, thanks for tuning in. I'm Ayana.
Elise.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye!